Blog Talk Radio.
Last day in March. I can't believe it. I've been in Puerto Rico 3 months, three whole months. I'm excited. Three more months. Well, I have to count the days because I haven't literally been in Puerto Rico 3 months. Hi, Amy. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. We've got the music going there, which is good. The intro.
We got the music. We need to find a high definition version of it because it's actually a little grating. But I think our guys in marketing have found a new piece of music that they want to use for all of my shows. So we should have that ready, hopefully for next week. But that'll be very dramatic, very militant.
Okay. That was pretty dramatic, I thought.
Yes, no, I actually love that piece of music. I forget who composed it, but I actually love that piece of music. But it's not a good recording, or it doesn't come across good. It comes across as
I still don't understand how you get the Blog Talk sound into Zoom. That's how technologically behind you I am. But in any event, improvement. I'm all happy for them.
How do I get the Blog Talk sound into Zoom? I don't know.
I don't. Yeah, I'm sure.
No. I get it into Zoom because I feed it into my. Basically any sound on the computer feeds to Zoom. Any sound, so I can play you a video now from YouTube, and it'll feed into Zoom.
I see.
That's
so you have a Blog Talk window open or something.
I have a Blog Talk window open, but I can, here's...
That's fine. Tech for now. We don't need to even go through it. We can...
Your Bell's piano controller. I don't know. It's on the bottom of your what do you call it?
Oh, was that the ad at the beginning or something? What was that?
No, that's the Ravel Piano Concerto in G major.
Over here, it sounded like noise.
At the bottom of your post.
Okay,
that
but
was
it
the
sounded...
clapping as they entered the stage.
Oh, okay.
So anything I play on the computer, which is nice, because yesterday I critiqued Ben Shapiro and I could play the video, and the video appeared on Zoom because you can do a share screen. And then you can play the video, but any audio I play appears in Zoom. All right.
Beautiful. Okay.
All right. Well, people are telling us to start the show, and then they'll complain about what we're talking about on the show. And then they'll, because people like to complain. All right.
Well, let's, we could go with Shapiro because Shapiro actually retweeted the tweet that is the
that was
inspiration
for
the
yeah.
show. So basically, Trump puts out there this criticism of Amazon, and why is he out there criticizing Amazon again? We could say it's because, everybody talks about the whole Russia collusion case as nothing burger. So this week there was a story and I called it nothing caviar because Trump's attorneys, Trump's attorney last year floated the idea to Manafort. And I guess Gates is the other guy who's been indicted they could be pardoned perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was in the New York Times the day that Trump was tweeting about. Maybe that's why he's doing it. I don't know. It's like give the little populist red meat or something. But he's
tweeting. he clearly hates Amazon. This is not accidental. I mean, it keeps coming up. It came up during the campaign. It's coming up now. I mean, I still think the origin of it is this hatred of the Washington Post and Bezos owning the Washington Post, and this is a way to put pressure. But I also think it's his infantile understand, here I am calling the president names again, and I'm going to be called an emotionalist, and I don't reason. But it's his really infantile understanding of economics. So the whole idea that they cause mom and pop stores to shut down, which is absolutely true. Yeah. Good. Because they provide better service and better value.
Better value, like I said in the tweet, yeah.
And then the other aspect of it, which is reminds me of the tariffs, is they don't pay local taxes, which is, I'm not sure it's completely true. I think it is true, right? Because they don't have local operations.
Brick and mortar, yeah.
They do pay sales taxes pretty much everywhere now. But they don't pay local taxes, and the brick and mortar does pay local taxes. So Donald Trump's logic, right, is if something bad is being done to you, then, and it's not being done to me, the way to solve that problem is not to stop doing the bad thing to you, it's right. to start doing the bad thing to me. So if Chinese consumers are being screwed because they pay tariffs on American goods that they're bringing in, the solution to that is not to pressure or encourage or the Chinese to reduce tariffs or just ignore it because it's China and it's none of our business, in a sense. But it's to inflict that same pain on Americans. So because the mom and pop stores, you know, are paying too much taxes, the solution is not to cut their taxes or to give them some it's to increase the taxes on Amazon to level the playing field. And it reminds me of Uber, right? You've got Uber that is not regulated like a taxi. So the solution of everybody is not to reduce regulations on taxis, because Uber has proved that you don't need regulations on taxis. That's right. They proved it, right? It works. Instead, it's to increase regulations on Uber, right? That's what everybody demands. So, and this is Donald Trump's mentality, which is a leftist zero-sum business is bad, creative destruction, which is what capitalism does constantly, is bad. We want stagnation. What was that essay by Ayn about stagnation? Do you remember?
Not that one, no.
Oh, I've got to find it. Okay, I'll find it because it's.
Yeah, go ahead and find it.
Yep.
But, you know, so this is not surprising to me coming from him. But the thing that is surprising is the people who will come in and rally and support him. And this is why I started the tweet, responded to him with, you know, we get 280 characters now. It's awesome. We can do a lot.
Yep.
And I started out saying taxation is still theft. You know, there's a whole bunch of these people who are perfectly happy to throw around that meme taxation is theft. You know, it went forever. And then now when Trump is essentially suggesting that we throw more taxes at Amazon, no, let's just forget that. And then I had a whole bunch of people argue with me, taxation is not theft. And essentially you didn't build that, that basically all the services the government provided that somehow, you know, you're responsible for it and taxation isn't theft. And,
So there is an excellent article in The Virtue of Selfishness, which I encourage everybody to read, by Nathaniel Brandon. And
that's why I didn't remember it. Sorry.
And it, I mean, she kept it in it, and it's a good article. It's a good, essay because she edited it. It's called The Divine Right of Stagnation.
Okay, right.
And this is exactly what and it's exactly deals with some of these issues. It's these issues of we don't want progress. You know, what about those mom and pop stores? Or, you know, and it, you know, it's really a great essay. So I encourage everybody to read it. I'm not sure. I don't think it's available for free on campus. I shouldn't say this, but if you Google Divine Right of Stagnation, there are lots of copies of it online for free. So
yeah,
they shouldn't be, but there are a lot of them. It's like, I don't think it's controllable at this point.
Okay. Okay. Well, we didn't say that. But so let me back up a little bit, because I was going to ask you a couple things about this.
I just went off. Yeah.
It's fine. No, it's good. But so first of all, I don't know that Trump is making the exact argument that Obama and Warren made, right? The you didn't build that argument. And first of all, I don't think he's that principled to make the argument. They're principled leftists, in effect, making that sort of argument. But certainly that tweet gave the aura of you didn't build that, you know, that there's something about that Amazon is not responsible for its own success in a certain way, that it's indebted to government in some particular way. But he's not obviously as clear about it and
he's not an intellectual among other things. And Obama was much more intellectual, evil, but intellectual. He's not. But in his gut, kind of his instinct is to hate people more successful than himself. He dropped in the Forbes 400 list significantly in the richest people in the world list as Jeff Bezos has zoomed up to the top, being valued at $100 billion. So I think he's jealous of, I really think Donald Trump is that kind of person. I also think that he really doesn't get it. I really think he doesn't understand economics. He has a leftist understanding of economics, which is zero sum. And, I think it's the Washington Post. So if you combine all those things, it really is. But so I think the issue that he was raising was the post office, right? And everybody is now raising this issue with the post office. Look, I'm sure Amazon went in to negotiate with UPS and FedEx and the post office. And the post office gave them the best deal. It wasn't like they went to the government and said, please give us a good deal with the post office. The post office tentatively runs or nominally runs as an independent agency. It loses money. It's not Amazon's fault. It's the fact that it's a government agency's fault. It's the fact that it has a sacrificial business model. Why is it sacrificial? The post office, by mandate, has to deliver mail even when it loses money. So if you live in rural America, and let's say it would make sense to deliver mail to you once a week. No, the post office has to deliver mail to you at least five times a week, maybe even six times a week. Mm-hmm. So if they were privatized, they would only deliver mail to you once a week. Now, in a world of email, who cares, right? Why does it matter? But, right. but you see, the government can't adapt, can't adjust, right? So the post office is losing money. It has excess capacity. So what it's actually doing is using the excess capacity in certain areas to fulfill Amazon needs. So it's not clear to me at all that they're actually losing money on Amazon. If you take into account that this is idle capacity and there's massive fixed costs.
Right. Right.
And on top of that, they deliver on Sundays. So the post office delivers Amazon on Sundays often.
Yes.
That's, again, using idle capacity. So my guess is that without Amazon, the post office would be in far worse shape.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm thinking, too. Now, I don't know how they calculate this, but I've got that article from Investor's Business Daily over in the program notes. By the way, people who are listening for maybe the first time to our show, I put program notes at my blog at don'tletitgo.com. So I've got a whole list of articles. And there's an article from Investor's Business Daily saying that Trump's criticisms of Amazon don't make any sense except for this issue of the post office. And they calculated that I think for each package, it was $1.46 that the post office loses per package. But this is something that the government is deciding to do, to continue to prop up the USPS in a way, subsidize it in a way that someone like Amazon can take advantage of it. Is that Amazon's fault?
Of course not. I mean, if the US government is doing this, it's available to anybody. When I send mail, they're propping me up, right? It should cost me more. And so we're all getting a subsidy. Why would Amazon not try? I mean, we're not getting a subsidy. We're all getting our mail delivered at the loss of the post office. This is not a subsidy. This FC, first of all, I would bet anybody that the post office is unbelievably inefficient. We talked about some of the inefficiencies a minute ago. If it was privatized, mail would be cheaper, not more expensive, and be more reliable. I send everything like UPS or FedEx, or even if it's a post office, I want it tracked because I don't trust mm-hmm. them. So imagine if it was an actual, if it was an actually private company, we would all be cheaper, and it might even be cheaper for Amazon. So the whole issue, and it's stunning to me that it's coming from people who follow me on Facebook, that it's people mm-hmm. who I would think know better. But then again, who knows who follows me on Facebook? I don't know. I mean, it could be anybody. But part of it is that they're willing to make any excuse for Donald Trump. Part of it is that it turns out that most people really don't have an understanding how economics work. And most people resent big business. Most people hate and don't have – I mean, when I think about big business, I am in awe. I'm in awe mm-hmm. of their success. I'm in awe of the values they've provided me. I'm in awe with the goods and services that they create. I mean, Amazon in particular has changed the world. I've talked about this many times. Every big business became a big business, almost all of them became big business because they were good. Because they were good. You don't become big unless you're really, really good. And the only way to become, the only what it means to be good is to provide value. So they all became so.
Well, and people are basically saying that
unbelievable.
Somehow Amazon hasn't earned its success, that Bezos, whatever he's worth, he hasn't earned that. Why? And the thing that they point to is this postal service subsidy. They don't dare go as far as Warren and Obama did, because Warren and Obama basically say, if you've lived in society and you've ever learned anything from anybody else, then whatever you accomplish in your life isn't yours. Trump isn't going that far. Trump supporters aren't going that far. But just by the smear of Amazon, there's, you know, it's sort of like they're channeling the energy, the negative anti-businessman energy from that argument. And then even if you just look at this one argument that, oh, Amazon shouldn't accept subsidies from the Postal Service, that's wrong. And so that's why I put in the program notes this link to, there's from the Ayn Rand, let's find the argument in different places. But Rand talked about this, you know, should you accept government grants and scholarships? Or another way that it's come up, people who like to criticize Rand, they say she should never take Social Security payments.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way I look at it is we are all essentially, to a certain extent, enslaved by the government right now. The government is initiating force against us, taking money away from us against our will, regulating our conduct. And to the extent that you are being productive in a certain industry and you're going to end up taking a benefit from the government, take it. Now, don't then fail to criticize government for what it's doing that's wrong. You're going to keep criticizing it. But at the same time, you don't have to sit there and suffer and not take the benefit that you're entitled to. So Amazon, yeah, like you were saying, go and negotiate the rates with the Postal Service like you do with UPS and FedEx, and take the cheapest one just like any businessman would, and go out there and be productive. It's not their job to criticize the government.
No. I mean, the issue of Ayn Rand taking Social Security is a little different in the sense that she said you should only take it if you're also against it. Right. You only have a legitimacy of taking it if you're against it. But here, I don't even think it's that. Look, we live in a mixed economy. We live in an economy in which the government plays a huge role. Let's say the government deregulates me. Should I say, no, I want to be regulated like everybody else? I mean, that is bizarre. That would be ridiculous. Now, it is true. So somebody's saying, why should Amazon get federal tax breaks that Walmart or other big retailers don't get? Now, that's just not true. Walmart gets the same tax breaks, but they get those tax breaks on their online business. So Walmart bought, oh my God, I can't remember the name of the big, it bought this massive online retailer to try to compete with Amazon. And on all sales on that online retailer, Walmart does not pay, it pays basically the same taxes as Amazon does. It gets the so-called same breaks as Amazon does. The fact is that Amazon pays all the taxes that everybody else does. The only sales taxes, taxes it doesn't pay are local sales taxes. Walmart doesn't pay local sales taxes either if it ships you the good, if you buy off of the equivalent of their catalog. The only time you pay is when you have a brick and mortar facility in that locality that then collects taxes for the government, which I think is absurd. Businesses should not be tax collectors for the government. So the whole thing is nuts. Now, one of the reasons Amazon is not paying any federal taxes is because it lost money for so many years. So again, it boggles my mind that people are not actually doing their research. If you look at Amazon, for 20 years it never made money. During that period of time, they accumulated the massive tax loss carry forwards. I'm sorry, I have to teach you a class in taxes, but some of the people out there, right? And as a consequence of that, while now maybe they are profitable, they still don't have to pay taxes because they lost money for such a long time.
It's called entrepreneurship, investing and going at a loss for so long. And then when you earn money, then it shouldn't count as net income because you've lost for so long.
Exactly. And by the way, Donald Trump used this technique not to pay taxes for years and years and years and years. He lost a huge amount of money in some of the bankruptcies, and he used that to offset his gains in later years. So he should be the last one in the world to complain about people not paying their taxes.
And corporate taxes should be zero anyway, right? It's the pass-through entity, yes? So
absolutely. It should be completely. It's all being paid by employees and by consumers. So you want to raise taxes on Amazon, you're only raising taxes on yourself because it becomes a hidden tax. No,
I mean, to me, it's like there's a slave who's figured out how to escape, and everybody else who's enslaved is like, oh, let's go back and enslave him too.
Yeah, and look, you read stuff in the paper. It's amazing to me that when people read stuff that they disagree with in the New York Times, they go, oh, well, that's the mainstream media. They're selling us garbage. But they read stuff like this, and they just buy it in the mainstream media. When the mainstream media says Apple doesn't pay taxes, you just believe that? Stop believing stuff, right? I mean, if you really want to understand how much Apple and Amazon and these companies pay in taxes, do your research. Otherwise, don't pretend you know anything. So that's what drives me crazy, is the certainty with which people come to these issues based on bad information that have reinforced their biases. Amazon, businesses out there are doing their best to minimize the amount of taxes they pay. I do too. I moved to Puerto Rico after all. You should too. If you're not trying to minimize the amount of taxes you pay, you're being unselfish and therefore irrational and therefore immoral almost, right? So within the law, you should minimize the amount of taxes you pay, and at the same time, advocate for a better, a lower, fairer tax code. But that,
for everybody,
even if you're
yes.
advocating for that, you would still try to take as many exclusions and deductions as you can. And business does the exact same thing. And to criticize business for that instead of criticizing the politicians that create the loopholes and everything is absurd. Even if it's true that Amazon has an Amazon loophole, that they don't pay any taxes, good for them. Now, I would criticize the politicians who gave them that loophole, because I think it's wrong to give one company
and
another company.
Well, did they give it,
company.
Or did Amazon create a business model such
that they could thrive
given the existing?
I'm saying if.
Yeah, if. Yeah.
And Amazon didn't create a business model to thrive because of taxes. It created a business model to provide us with great services. And it just happens to be that has made it possible, that has resulted in them paying.
Calculations of the cost that they would encounter in providing us with this service, right? Unfortunately, government, it's not metaphysical, right? It's not inherent, but it's something that any business person has to take into account when they're putting forth a plan. Yeah.
So people are saying as long as their taxes should be equal to everybody, granted, but that's the job of politicians. That's not the job of the business. That's the job of politicians, to give us a tax code that is, quote, fair. I'm not sure it should be equal to everybody. I actually believe Amazon should pay zero, because corporate taxes should be zero. And I believe that billionaires should pay lower taxes than me, because they've given back much more than I have, right? I'm being facetious here, but yeah, they've created more, they produced more, and their capital in their hands is more valuable to society than the capital in my hands. So they should pay lower taxes if you want to play that game. But yeah, even if you say that everybody should pay the same, which I've said many times, should be the same, it should be simple, it should be flat, it should be easy and everything, then that's fine. But the blame for it not being that way is on a political class, not on a businessman. And if it's not that way, and for a business not to take advantage of that is absurd and ridiculous.
Yeah. And this, what you were saying about, pay as little as possible, ties into something that I've said a million times. When people say, oh, these rich guys who think that everybody should pay more in taxes and that they should pay more in taxes, let them go ahead and pay more in taxes than they're being, required to do. I actually think it would be immoral to do that today, because our government does not have spending under control and everything else. And it's like being an enabler to some drug addict or something.
It's right out of Atlas Shrugged, right?
Yeah.
It's right out of Atlas Shrugged. I mean, Atlas Shrugged, the assertion is made that it's immoral to keep working and to keep paying these taxes to the bastards who are taking it.
Well,
away.
That's a different thing, right? So we haven't gotten to the.
We haven't gotten,
stage
but it's similar.
Drugs,
it's a similar argument. You want to minimize, partially because it's your money, and partially because of the way they spend it. They spend it primarily to violate your rights. Mm-hmm. So the less you give them, the better, and that's true of you, and that's good of businesses. Now, again, Walmart is under the exact same tax regime as Amazon. Amazon is actually opening up retail stores. I don't know if you've seen Amazon stores. I think there are three of them in Manhattan.
No, I haven't. Wow.
On, and there's at least one in Seattle. There are others. It's supposed to be really cool. When you buy something at an Amazon retail store, they are taxed exactly like Walmart. So there is no difference in taxation between Walmart and Amazon. If you're comparing, when you compare apples to apples, Walmart can cut a deal with the post office to have its stuff delivered at the same rate as Amazon does. And maybe they do. I don't even know who delivers for Walmart. I forget the name of the, it drives me crazy, the Walmart online, somebody, Walmart online store, what's it called? It has, they bought this massive online thing. Somebody will.
I've shopped Walmart online a little bit, but I only see Walmart. I don't see anybody else.
No, they bought a huge business, online business, but I can't remember. I'll find it. All right.
Okay. So, it's essentially the flavor of the you didn't build that argument. It's not exactly the same as Warren and Obama, but it's feeding into that same anti-business mentality, which
Absolutely.
Is not what you would expect from a Donald Trump. And it's not what I would expect from his followers. I mean, the vitriol that I got on Twitter because of retweet from Shapiro, it was pretty crazy. And I was out there defending myself. They all assume I'm a leftist as soon as I criticize him.
Yep.
But I agree with what you said yesterday when you were doing that show on Reich, that it's important to criticize him when he is being inconsistent with a proper philosophy.
Pretty much all the time, right?
Yeah, they try to say that he's some Ayn Rand hero or acolyte or something.
So Jonathan Honing, of course, has the answer.
Okay, good.
Jets. If you go to Jet.com, which is, I think, the second largest online retailer, Jet is owned by Walmart. Walmart bought it, and I'm sure you get Jet is taxed exactly the same as Amazon because it is similar in that sense. So, but I mean, you're absolutely right. We have to criticize Donald Trump. One of the things that I think is important for people to realize is the answer is not in politics. It can't be in politics. The Republicans are almost as bad as Democrats on economic issues and worse than Democrats on some other issues. And everybody in politics is bad today. There's really nobody. I mean, there are a few congressmen and maybe one or two senators that are decent. But the solution is not going to come because you need 60 votes in the Senate and you need 200 people, 200 plus in the House. You're just not going to get those numbers. And you're not going to get anybody elected to be president who is actually going to have the right ideas. They're not electable. And the Twitter, the response to your tweet is an example. It's not Donald Trump that's the problem. It's not Republicans and Democrats that are the problem. It's people that are the problem. It's the people who hate Amazon because people who read the New York Times and accept everything they read that reinforces their preconceptions and ignore everything. It's the non-objectivity of the public. It's the fact that people are so irrational.
They're willing to malign and criticize achievers, entrepreneurs in this country, and accept, again, these kind of false accusations about them without doing their research and thinking about this. Is Amazon really to blame if they use the Postal Service? Think about that a little bit and think about the value that Amazon offers them. This goes into another angle, and this is something maybe we should do another day, which is, what is the American sense of life today, right? In that essay, Don't Let It Go, which is what I've named my blog after and my show after and everything else, one of the characteristics of the American sense of life that she talks about is that Americans admire achievement. And I wonder, do they really admire achievement as much anymore?
I don't think they do. And I have to say, this is one of the things, this is probably the worst thing about the Donald Trump presidency. And whether it is a cause or just an effect, it's hard to tell. But the fact is that until recently, I still believed, people loved Steve Jobs. People admired Apple. People admired Google and Facebook and all these companies because they were great achievers. And they loved technology. That's the other thing about Americans. We love our iPhones and our gadgets and our toys, and we love technology. And to me, that was still a reflection of that exact American sense of life that Ayn Rand talked about, is Americans still love business. They still love achievement. They still love success. And Donald Trump doesn't, any of those things. But, and that's okay, and neither did Obama. you know, Obama hated that. But I still had a feeling, in spite of Obama's resentment towards all of that, there was a significant percentage of the American people who still held on to it. The American sense of life was still barely there.
Maybe
but
in
was,
reaction to Obama.
Yeah, but it was still there, right? They still loved Apple. They still, when Steve Jobs died during Obama's reign, right, people mourned. People literally mourned. And that was a beautiful thing to see because they admired somebody who was a great achiever.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes Donald Trump. And now it seems like people on the left and people on the right are hating the technology companies, the last achievers in America. And what you're seeing now all over the place is on the conservative websites and on the Bernie Sanders websites, hatred of Facebook and Apple and Microsoft, yeah, and Google and Amazon. So you're seeing that where is the remnant of that sense of life? Where is that admiration for achievers? I thought it was in the love of Silicon Valley, but you know, over the last 2 years, I've been doing a bunch of shows on Silicon Valley, and every time I do it, I get the most horrible tweets, the most horrible emails. People are like, yeah, but they're lefties, and you know, who cares? Why is politics the primary thing in your achievement? Politics. I'll take achievement any day. I'll take a group of achievers. I don't care what their politics are, to a bunch of nobodies who happen to, you know, who happen to be Republicans, as if Republicans is some panacea. That lack of admiration for achievement is what really, really, really scares me. And the fact that so many people left and right are calling for the regulation of technology companies is, that's the end of America. I mean, if that comes to be, I really do think that's the end of this American sense of life. You can pretend it still exists. You can still talk about it. You can read those old essays by Ayn Rand. But it ain't there anymore. I mean, Leonard Peikoff, years ago, right, Americans versus America, which was a brilliant talk. Everybody should go find it. It's on YouTube. Says the American sense of life, that was in 2003 or 4, is dead. We're now 13 years later with George Bush and Obama and now Trump. It's 13 years worse, the sense of life. And is it still alive at all? I'm not sure. I'm not convinced.
No. And that was one of the things that was most depressing. And that was really the inspiration for me to come back and say, no, Trump is essentially saying to Amazon, you didn't build that.
Yes.
Don't you guys get it? And no, he's not saying it in the full philosophical sense because he doesn't have a comprehension of the full philosophical sense that Obama and Warren did. But it's that same just not admiring achievement, being skeptical of people who achieve things, that they must have gotten it through some favor, you know, some unfair advantage that they took. And the fact that there is some, you know, grain of truth to it because the post office does this subsidy thing, they just take it off and run with that without thinking about what's the most important thing here. And what would happen, you know, if Amazon said, okay, fine, we won't use the U.S. Postal Service anymore. It would collapse, like you were.
Mike on Facebook makes a really good point. I mean, this is the consequence of decades now of egalitarianism, of the inequality debate. And this is why I think the fact that Don and I wrote this book, Equal is Unfair, which you should all be reading, is so crucial, because I think this is such a huge issue. The whole egalitarianism, the inequality debate has only bred more envy and more resentment. And the more Americans buy into egalitarianism, and Leonard, of course, has one of his most powerful chapters and a brilliant chapter in the DIM hypothesis is on egalitarianism. He rips them to shreds in that book. The more people buy into this evil ideology of egalitarianism, the more they will hate achievement, the more they will hate success, the more they will resent anybody who has more, anybody who has achieved. And of course, egalitarianism is the death of the American sense of life, because egalitarian is the opposite of everything that it is to be an American. And I really fear that this obsession with inequality is a manifestation of the movement towards egalitarianism that Ayn Rand has been talked about in the 60s. 60 years, well, it can't be 60 years ago because I'm not 60 yet. But, you know, 55 years ago, 50 years ago. And it's just, it's just stunning to me and sad and disappointing. Somebody mentioned, I'm, you know, on YouTube, they're talking, I don't know what they're saying, but I saw something about an immigrant. And yeah, it's upsetting to me as an immigrant to this country and the hopes I had for the country and the belief I have in this country and the knowledge I have in what this country can and should be, to see Americans just throwing it away, literally throwing it away and being led in the chucking away of the American's life and the chucking away of
and
the American principles.
And it's people who throw
the
around
president.
The slogan MAGA, make America great again, and they're throwing it.
And they don't have, they don't have an idea of what America is, never mind how to make it great again. I mean, this is what I've said about Donald Trump from the beginning. You have to know what America is. You have to understand its founding principles and what animates the American spirit in order to be able to make it great again. And so Donald Trump has no clue about what those are. He can't make
it
great again.
That's why I ended that tweet with, are you sure it's America you want to make great again?
Yeah.
Because that doesn't come through.
No, it's more Europe,
so
right? Who's going after all these tech companies right now? It's Europe. Europe is slamming Microsoft, slamming Google, slamming Facebook. They went after Apple for not paying taxes. Ooh, Apple didn't pay their fair share. I think they had to pay $1 trillion or $1 billion, something in additional taxes to the European Union. And now, people who are supposedly for free markets, supposedly who understand taxation, understand the evil of taxation, they are now saying, oh, we should mimic Europe. We should be going after these companies because they don't pay enough taxes. No, companies should pay as little taxes as possible. So should individuals. I mean, if you can open an account in Panama, and legally, you know, open an account there and pay fewer taxes by, I don't know what you do in Panama, then go do it. Absolutely, it's your moral duty to yourself to go and do it. It's your money. Again, I moved to Puerto Rico.
Unless you have to jump, you know, through cartwheels and hoops and whatever. You know, there's a certain point where you say, It's not worth it.
It depends how much money it is. And
Right, exactly.
It depends.
I mean
it's not worth going
to Puerto
jail
Rico because it's a lot. Yeah.
I'm not for going to jail. But, hey, I moved to Puerto Rico. So, I mean, it's my money, and I intend to preserve it. And if I can preserve it, all of you should go out there and try to preserve your wealth and find ways to save money and pay as little taxes as you can. And I admire people who succeed in doing that. I admire companies who succeed in doing that. It's a point of a pride. I think Apple should go out there and say, yeah, we take advantage of every tax loophole possible. We minimize our taxes because you know what? Our fiduciary duty is not to the U.S. government. Our fiduciary duty is not to American taxpayers. Our fiduciary duty is to maximize shareholder wealth. And we will minimize taxes in order to maximize shareholder wealth. That's what we're hired to do. And that's when businessmen have the balls, the guts to say that, we will win.
Yeah. At least if they don't apologize for it, that's about the best I expect of them today, right?
Apple's done a pretty good job. Apple's one of the better ones in terms of not apologizing for it and fighting it. They fought the European Union. I think they lost, and they're paying a huge amount of money now. But that's what many of our listeners would like the American government to mimic European government in terms of going after these companies and demanding more money. I mean, that to me, that is
bizarre. Let's all be equally shackled. It's yay.
Well, I mean, there's equality before the law, but then there's then we should fire our politicians for not creating that, not fire the beneficiaries.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the animus should be directed, is at the politicians. And as so many people have said, so many more rational people have said, because, you know, there's a lot of irrational people out there on Twitter in this whole Amazon Trump debate. But the rational ones have said that if Trump is, you know, complaining about the U.S. Postal Service, he should change the Postal Service. He should make it so that they don't subsidize Amazon.
Absolutely.
But good luck. Amazon will go elsewhere, and then we'll see who really needs whom, right?
Yeah, and there's no question who needs whom. I mean, Amazon is not going to lose because it loses its contract with the post office.
No. Only we could lose. So, you know, in terms of the tech companies, there is one qualm that I have right now, and it is this thing that I put in the program notes. So I'm not going to get too technical about it, A, because I need to get into the weeds about it more, but B, I just don't think it's called for here. It's this Cloud Act.
Okay.
That was attached to the omnibus spending bill. And it is related to this other article that you sent to me. There was a listener who had forwarded this article to you about Microsoft having to name its first data protection officer under these European regulations, the GDPR, having to do with privacy, right?
Yep, yep.
So the Cloud Act is in effect the American answer to the European Union's privacy regulations. And as I understand it, this Cloud Act that was attached to the omnibus never debated.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute before we even talk about the Cloud Act itself.
Sure.
I mean, attached to a $1.3 trillion bill, nobody
a
read it.
Pass spending bill.
Nobody
right?
talked about it. This is the first time I've ever heard about it was when you send me the link. This is a major bill affecting technology companies, therefore affecting all of our lives because we all use technology. And there's no discussion. There's no debate. There's no media. There's nothing. I mean, first of all, the media, if it was doing its job, would be railing against this. This is one thing. They would be attacking the politicians. Agree or disagree with the bill content is irrelevant here. This is not a government of men. This is not a government of laws anymore. It's a government of men. And they sneak by the laws in the middle of the night so that we don't notice, so that they can violate our rights. It is real. Again, this is the scary stuff. And the fact that this isn't the kind of stuff that gets people pissed off, that they get pissed off about Amazon, that they get pissed off about, even about Facebook, and Facebook has problems, but they get pissed off about stuff like that. But they're not pissed off about the way the laws are being passed because it's Republican passing them, so it's okay. I mean, imagine if Obama had done this.
Oh, yeah.
If Obama said this about Amazon, you know all these people would be after Obama, hating business and all that. And if the Democrats had snuck this bill in through the night, what they would have done. So just that. Ugh.
No, it's horrible. And they did sneak a major piece of privacy legislation into this spending bill that it wasn't even marked up in committee, wasn't debated at all. They just passed it along with this omnibus.
Yep.
Underscores something that I've been talking about for a long time, which is that it is a disaster to leave the protection of our data, the private protection of our private data, up to our legislators, right? All of this would be covered under the Fourth Amendment, under the constitutional law, if not for this arcane sounding third party doctrine that I've been railing on for quite a long time. This third-party doctrine started being applied to ordinary people's private data in the 1970s. And it's just, of course, the amount of data that we share with companies has only increased pretty much exponentially since the 1970s. And now we've got it the case that, you know, this phone I'm holding right here has more private data about me than anything in my whole house,
yeah,
right? So
yeah.
Persons, houses, papers, and effects. If that means anything in principle in the Constitution, it should apply to everything that we're sharing with the third parties through the technology right now. And it doesn't because of this doctrine. And therefore, we're at the mercy of our congressmen. And we see with this Cloud Act exactly what our congressmen are willing to do.
What in essence does the Cloud Act say?
So in essence, what it does is it makes agreements with these governments overseas to allow kind of a smoother process for obtaining data from tech companies. And as I understand it from the Electronic Freedom Foundation, who seems to understand the ins and outs of how these things are going to work technically, the essential thing to know is that it can make it easier in certain circumstances for the law enforcement, whether here or abroad, to obtain information about you without a warrant, no probable cause, no particularized suspicion.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, if, for example, because, you know, again, we're at the mercy of our Congress creatures. Suppose in a certain circumstance here, in order for our law enforcement to obtain information about us, they would have to actually go before a judge and present something like probable cause and particularized suspicion. Maybe they'd have to. Then they say, well, I don't really want to do that. So why don't I make Britain gather that information for me? And I'll just go ahead and grab it for them.
Yep.
I guess Britain's a bad example because they're not
yep.
going to be in the EU and maybe not covered. But, you know, some EU country. And so it allows for the possibility of that. And because so much of whether we can have those agreements with the other countries depends only on Trump and the people who he appoints, it gives the administration, the executive, just way too much discretion over when our law enforcement could obtain the information about us with a lower threshold. It's this data sharing stuff. Now, from what I understand, and this is the thing that is troublesome to me, it has the potential to reduce the regulatory burden on some of the tech companies from this GDPR. As I understand, the GDPR was the EU's answer to the Snowden revelations. And they say, well, hey, we want to protect the privacy of our citizens, so let's have a whole bunch of vast web of regulations that are impossible to navigate. And, you know, you tech companies, you have to build servers here and you have to have your data officers and the blah, blah, blah. So the Cloud Act might, I guess, make it easier for these tech companies. And so a number of them made statements in favor of it before the Congress creatures, you know, shoved it into the omnibus. And so do I blame the tech companies for going along with the Congress creatures?
I don't think you can at the end of the day, because they're going to be screwed one way or the other. So they're going to screw to Europe or screwed here or screwed in both places. And yes, you can say, hey guys, there's a better alternative. This is, you know, you shouldn't support this. But the thing that really scares me is that what we're seeing is that the executive branch in every realm is gaining more and more and more power. And Congress is voluntarily handing over more and more and more power to the executive branch. And the Supreme Court shows no appetite for restricting the power of the executive branch. So, and this is how authoritarianism creeps in, right? You get a president who's more and more and more powerful, and you get a Congress and a legislature that's less and less and less powerful, and you get a court that basically demurs because it's political appointees. And this is how we slide into authoritarianism. And I really, I mean, I'm giving a talk at OCON on how to be a, you know, on being a rational optimist. And it's going to be hard for me to give the talk, because if I look at politics, if my focus is politics, then there's nothing optimistic out there. There's zero, zilch, nothing. You know, the inevitable outcome of everything going on in the world right now politically and people's response to politics is authoritarianism, and authoritarianism much sooner than I think we expect. Let me take – I think we haven't done a break. Let me take a break.
Sure. And when you come back, I'm going to actually give what I think could be a potential solution to this issue and not just talk about the horrible
thing. Before I take the break, let me remind everybody, if you're liking the show, share it. There's a share button on YouTube. There's a share button on Facebook. There's even a share button on a Periscope. There's even sharing on Blog Talk. You can actually go and share it on your social media. Share it wide. That's the way these shows grow, is by you guys sharing it. Also, go and subscribe to Amy's YouTube channel. Go subscribe to my YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is easier because it's right there. You're on the channel if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're on Facebook,
I'll say hi on YouTube right now so people can find me.
Yeah, give them the link. If you're on Facebook, go to YouTube and subscribe there too, because some videos come out on YouTube that I don't put up on Facebook. For example, the YouTube of the event with Dave Rubin will now be on Facebook. It'll be on YouTube. So you want to know when that happens, then go and subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'd appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, a quick commercial.
Did you know there's an easy, automatic way to support the Ayn Rand Institute all year long? For any purchase made at Amazon.com, the Amazon Smile program sends a small percentage to ARI. Doesn't matter what you buy, if you shop at Amazon, the money you spend can help spread Ayn Rand's ideas. Are you a student required to read Bad Philosophers? Buy the books on Amazon and support ARI. Birthdays, anniversaries, and Christmas, all these purchases add up. And it's not just you. Imagine the results if every Ayn Rand fan in the country used Amazon Smile to support ARI. Are you smiling? Sure you are. Sign up is free and easy. Just go to smile.amazon.com and make sure you select ARI as your Smile recipient.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Don't forget also to go to our Patreon pages and support us through Patreon. Even $2 a month, $1 a month, whatever you can afford, both encourages us because we see we've got more supporters.
Yes.
It provides us with funds to actually do more things. And you become part of a community that is supporting a cause that you really believe in. And we have all kinds of specials and all kinds of goodies for people who provide funding through Patreon. You can also do it on PayPal. Both of those for mine is Yaron Brooks Show. And for Amy, it's just Amy Peacock.
Amy Peacock.
Amy
yeah.
Peacock. Mm-hmm. All right, Amy. So what is the solution? Because there's no question the privacy issue is an issue. It's a real issue.
Right.
And it's not obvious. The solution is not obvious. And Congress is going to have to do something about it. What should Congress do?
Well, this is the thing. I don't think Congress should be the one to do
Congress
things about
repeal
it.
The third, couldn't Congress repeal that interpretation?
Congress cannot, right? So this is a constitutional law doctrine.
Okay.
And so what we got to have is we have to have the Supreme Court reining it in. And this is what the Carpenter case was all about. And we're waiting for the ruling right now in the Carpenter case. What could happen? I mean, suppose that, and this is the problem, right? That, you know, you say, okay, well, you know, can you just have a simple solution at the top level? You really can't. Privacy for such a long time has been seen as a separate right, as a fundamental right. And all of these European regulations are based on the premise of privacy as this freestanding fundamental right. But the way I see it, particularly in this context with the tech companies, is that privacy is created through a contract. I have a contract with Facebook, I have a contract with Microsoft, you know, whatever, the tech companies, Apple. And that contract has privacy provisions in it, and it should be upheld, it should be sacrosanct, unless the government produces a warrant based on probable cause, based on particularized suspicion. Then go ahead and invade the contract, just like they can come into our home based on a proper warrant. I'm not an anarchist. But right now, it's not seen that way. It's seen as this separate right, and moreover, there's this third-party doctrine. So, you know, what's the European Union's answer? The European Union's answer is, let's have all these, you know, morass of regulations and make you have a data officer and engage in all these procedures. Why not just uphold a human being's fundamental right to make contracts, to engage in voluntary agreement with each other? And I could see a government, for example, saying, okay, you know, you don't want to spend your whole day actually reading those stupid things before you click I agree and everything else. Suppose that the government, like it does with copyright, put out one or a few default arrangements that you would have. And they'd say, okay, this is arrangement A, this is B, this is C. And when I go to Facebook, it's arrangement B, and I can say, okay, I know what arrangement B is, and I can click, and I can actually know what I'm agreeing to. You know, Facebook can use my data to put ads in my face and sell me stuff. Okay, I'm fine with that. You know, whatever it is.
Yep.
But let's respect an individual's ability to make voluntary agreements about this and realize that that's what it is fundamentally, as opposed to saying, oh, yeah, government, they'll protect my privacy.
Well, and we know what they do. They want to aggregate that data and use it for themselves. And of course, once we let our data loose, once we allow for a doctrine that says that as soon as you give up your data, it's not yours anymore, then we can see what's happening. It's everywhere. There's no limits to it. And Facebook can sell it to some other group that then does political targeting. Not that I think that's a big deal, but still, I mean, I should be able to say, yes, you can share my data. No, you cannot share my data. Yes, you can give it to the government when they want it. No, you cannot give it to the government when they want it. If they want
unless they present a warrant.
Yeah,
right?
If they present a warrant, of course. I mean, you know, we're assuming there's no warrant. Without a warrant, they shouldn't be able to access anything unless I do so voluntarily, right? Unless I'm willing voluntarily to give them data. But other than that, they should. Now, of course, we know that that's all, in a sense, there is no privacy because, you know, one of the things I cherish most are my financials. And yet the government can legally, without a warrant, ask for all my financials. And if I don't give them to them, I go to jail. So that's called the IRS, right? And you should see my financials. I mean, it's like that. Right? I enjoy making them complex just to think about the IRS agents having to. I shouldn't even talk about this because they're going to come after me if I do. But just to make their life harder. I mean, there's a value just in that.
Yeah.
Not anymore, though. Not anymore. I'm Puerto Rico now. Have I said that today?
Does it make it simpler as well for you in terms of all the filings and stuff?
Oh, not this year, but next year, unbelievably simple. I don't file federal taxes.
Because, well, I mean, that's one of the things.
I might have to a little bit, but generally, I will file no federal taxes. I just file in Puerto Rico, and in Puerto Rico, it's going to be much simpler, yes.
It's the time and the headache. They take from you. And that's why I say at a certain point, you know, yeah, I could spend 5 more hours and get a few more deductions or something, little tiny ones. No, at a certain point, I just say, yeah, I'm paying a little bit more, but I'm having less headaches. And that's how I balance it.
Yeah.
So we're going to wait and see what happens with Carpenter. Is the Supreme Court going to roll back the third party doctrine in a significant way and maybe respect people's rights to contract for their privacy? And yes, could government help a little bit in terms of making it easier for you as an individual to contract for your privacy,
standard,
the way that it helps with copyright, for example.
Yeah.
Copyright is a very standardized agreement that you should be able to make about your own intellectual property. The government gives you this default arrangement and protects it.
Yep.
Fine, do that in privacy. But other than that, don't have this GDPR and make people have data protection officers and all of the
they
headaches.
They need power. So, I mean, how do they want power over our lives? And this is one way to get power over our lives.
Yeah. So let me give you another reason to be glad you are in Puerto Rico and not in California. How about that? You want to cheer? Because in California, we've just had a judge who ruled that Starbucks, Peet's, and other retailers will face potentially massive liability under California law for not warning consumers
poisoning us
that naturally occurring substances in roasted coffee beans can cause cancer.
Yep.
So you go to Starbucks, and instead of them being able to have a nice, pretty little cup with their graphic and branding and all the wonderful things that their marketing people think about, it's got to have this hideous looking cancer warning on it, I guess.
Yep.
It's just the latest in California.
It's insanity. I mean, not only that, but everything I've read recently about the medical research into coffee says that it's amazingly good for you, and that I was probably not drinking enough coffee to get all the medical benefits from coffee, and that I should increase my coffee consumption. So the idea that some idiotic judge in California can determine and has the knowledge and the wherewithal to determine that coffee is causing cancer or not causing cancer is bizarre given the state, I think, of medical research in it. But it's none of his business anyway. I mean, again, this is the market. If you think coffee is causing cancer, don't drink the coffee. I don't believe cigarettes should have big labels saying this causes cancer. Everybody knew cigarettes were bad for them. At least since the early 1970s, everybody knew it. So if you need to put it on a picture, I mean, again, it's catering to an anti-conceptual mentality. It's catering to the perception. It really is horrible.
Yeah. This Cato article that I found, thanks to Tim Sandifer, it says almost everyone agrees by now that the over-proliferation of warnings makes it less likely that consumers will pay attention to those few warnings that actually flag notable risks.
Pollution. Yeah, I mean, I can see if there was a real risk. If there's something really bad about the product that you wanted, I think the market would demand that you put it on there. And liability law, it could be a judge demanded it because they were sued. And yeah, but I mean, it's getting ridiculous. It's been ridiculous for decades. And California, of course, is at the forefront of anything being ridiculous.
Well, there's one way in which I have liked some of California, that California has pushed back against the Trump administration on some immigration.
No, don't get into immigration. We're going to lose all our listeners. Everybody's going to go away.
I actually do have a little bit on immigration in a bit here, but we can go back to Facebook before that if you like. You know, as you've noted, there's this anti-Facebook, you know, sort of just whole aura in the mainstream media. And of course, it's because people on the left and the right are now both, I guess, agreeing that they want to come in and clamp down on Facebook. Facebook employees are in an uproar over an executive's leaked memo. And there's this memo. Apparently, the guy, Andrew Bosworth, doesn't necessarily believe everything that he wrote in this memo. This memo was from 2016. This is what he wrote in the memo. And tell me what you think of it. He said, maybe someone dies in a terrorist attack coordinated on our tools, and still we connect people. The ugly truth is that we believe in connecting people so deeply that anything that allows us to connect more people more often is de facto good, end quote.
Well, I mean, he's right in some sense, as long as, you know, what does it mean, anything? You know, are they going to lie, steal, and cheat? Are they going to, you know, are they going to subvert individual rights to do it? Are they going to force people to use Facebook? Maybe we should have a regime where everybody has to use Facebook because it'll connect people more. But I don't think that's what he meant. I think he meant within the practices of a business, we will do anything to connect people. And I think he's right. That is, I'm not going to shut down Facebook because there's a risk a terrorist might use it in order to do stuff. Now, if I know a terrorist is on, I would shut the terrorist out.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I wouldn't shut down Facebook in order to do that. You don't live in order to, you know, life is not about protection. Life is about going out there and achieving and striving and moving forward. It's not about, it's wrong to live in fear and to guide your actions based on bad things happening. You don't want to encourage bad things happening, but bad things, you know, terrorists use this to coordinate their attacks, and it's encrypted, so they're more likely to use it more often. I still like the fact that it's encrypted because it's protecting me. So the fact that terrorists, add to that, the solution to terrorism is easy and simple, but and it's not to regulate Facebook. So, but that's ambition. I mean, what he's expressing is ambition. They have a mission at Facebook to connect people, and they're all out about connecting people. And as long as they're not violating the law, as long as they're not violating rights, then go for it. You know, that's what they should be doing.
Now, see, you had to correct yourself because violating the law doesn't necessarily mean violating rights.
No, but
anymore.
They still shouldn't violate the law because it'll get them in trouble and it'll hurt them. So, now, it's also true that in the world in which we live in today, you cannot not violate the law. That was a double negative. Yeah, because the regulations are so complex, so ambiguous. Laws passed that you don't even know just passed, like the Cloud Act. And stuff like that, you don't know. I mean, remember that scene from Atlas Shrugged where Reardon has said that he's violated the law. And he said, well, but anything I do violates the law. The regulator says, well, of course, we want you to constantly violate the law. That's how we control you. That's how we use our power. It's exactly what they want. So everybody's violating the law to some extent all the time. But somebody said they're giving me 4 shekels every time I hold up my phone. I want to see it. Where's the money? You can do it right there on YouTube. There's a little dollar sign
my
at the bottom.
Woohoo.
You know, talk is cheap. I want to see you press the button, and I want to see shekels.
They can do that for you here on
They can do it on YouTube,
right?
You can make a contribution right online, and it highlights your statement.
Only
and
if you've got 1,000 followers, though.
Only if you have 1,000 followers. And you can actually then ask a question, and your question would get priority, because I give priority to people who pay me more, because I believe in cronyism. if you want my attention, press the dollar sign and ask a question, and I promise you I will answer that question, whatever it is, because it's got dollars attached to it.
So instead of this guy coming out and giving at least a qualified defense of this statement, he walked it back and apologized. And I don't really believe that, but we say provocative things and everything else. There is this sense that people want to just have 100% security all the time. They want to be guaranteed that risk will be eliminated for them and stuff. And they expect Facebook and these other companies to provide that as well. And for me, all I would expect of Facebook is, given the realities of the state of technology as it stands right now, if Facebook becomes reasonably aware that there's a terrorist network using their service to coordinate, that they shut that down as soon as they reasonably
can. Or they let the government know and they let law enforcement in, and law enforcement and Facebook monitor them and do whatever law enforcement believes is the right thing to do. It could be the law enforcement wants to see this network on Facebook because it's a way to discover who's really behind it. There are a lot of things that you could do to be able to monitor them. So to be able to deal with it. The wrong thing is to ignore it and to just let it happen. But I don't think that's what he was suggesting. I mean,
I don't think so either.
And instead of clarifying and defending, like most businessmen today, they backtrack. They backtrack.
No, and that's the thing that I worry about, you know, in this realm, and then also with the tech companies getting behind the Cloud Act, that they are a little too eager to be servants of the government now, in part, I guess, because they have this specter of regulation hanging over them.
Yeah, but think about it. Every single politician left, not every single, a majority of politicians left and right, and the public all seem to be ready to come after them with a vengeance. And they don't have the moral backbone to actually defend themselves morally. The only thing they know is to backpedal and actually appease. And it's sad. It's tragic because these are the most productive people in our world, and they have to deal with politics. They have to abandon principle.
Well, and moreover, they are the only ones standing in between us and 1984.
Yep.
Because if the government regulates these more than they already do, and believe me, they're already regulating them. So, for example, Facebook is under this so-called consent decree that came – I don't know if you remember this from some years ago.
Yeah.
The FTC got Facebook on some supposedly – you know, some privacy-related violation. And so Facebook entered into a consent decree with the federal government saying that the federal government had control over its privacy policy for the next 20 years, as long as it was on good behavior or whatever. And of course, now after the Cambridge Analytica, they're probably saying, oh, well, now we start a new 20-year clock and we're going to keep control over you. So, you know, it's already kind of in a bad way. I take Facebook as being very earnest. You know, I'm with you with Amazon.
Yeah.
I'm in awe of Facebook. They connect us. I think that they are really trying honestly to do this. I think that they were mistaken about what they were entitled to do in the Cambridge Analytica era, but I blame that on government. I blame that on the legal environment for privacy that government created. I don't blame that on Facebook.
My sense is that Zuckerberg is trying to do the right thing and is a good businessman and has created an amazing product. And I think that he's getting a bad rap, and he's going to get a bad rap, and he's getting a bad rap from the right, the so-called right, because he's a lefty
liberal,
to some extent. I mean, I don't think he's a huge lefty, but he tends to be on the left. You know, he's for universal basic income, but so are half the libertarians I know. So that's not a leftist position anymore. It crosses the entire plane. By the way, Darcy Plant wants to know if you're married.
If I'm married.
Is it a boy or girl? I can't even tell if it's a man or a woman asking the question. But it keeps coming up.
So, okay.
You get to choose if you want to answer that or not.
I'm not married, but I'm attached. So
she's attached, but not married. Okay, Darcy? They can do whatever they want with it. All right. Let's take another commercial break, and then we'll go on to the next thing.
Excellent. That sounds good. Yeah. It'll be immigration. Steel yourself.
Well, right now, I'm already seeing the numbers drop. We're going to talk about immigration when we come back. So,
not exactly immigration. Social media screening.
The idea that a person ought to be selfish is so alien to our culture that when people learn that Ayn Rand upheld a morality of selfishness, they are left scratching their heads. What could Rand possibly mean? In the new course, Being Selfish, Being Happy, at ARI Campus, Dr. Tara Smith discusses the crucial features of Rand's morality of selfishness, what she called rational egoism, explaining what it is, what it is not, and why it is an individual's only means of achieving sustainable happiness. Visit ARI Campus today and enroll in Being Selfish, Being Happy.
All right, we're back. Before we get to the immigration, two issues. So somebody writes, when you demonetize and censor conservatives, they're going to tend to hate you. Yeah, they're going to tend to hate you, and when they do that, you should hate them. But on the other hand, you would think conservatives believe in private property. I guess not. Not when it's them being demonetized. They don't believe in private property anymore. So now they're all for regulating these industries because they are the victims of it. If liberals were being demonetized, then I'm sure conservatives would be very much advocates for private property. No, there's a principle. The principle is private property. The principle is, you support the innovators, you support the productive. And if they do stupid things, then call them out on the stupid things. But you don't use the government. You don't use government force to correct the situation. You know, once you do, you've opened the door up to anybody, anywhere in government at any time, using force on anybody that doesn't do what they think is right to do. All right, somebody has asked me a question, and they backed it up with $5. So I have to take the question.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
This is an example of what all of you could be doing. It would be nice to see a stream. What there are about 75 people on YouTube, 75 times $5 that, you know, we could do well here.
I get a cut. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not that much money, Andrew, now that I think about it. You got to make it $50, guys. Come on. All right, the question is, do you think that people will eventually get fed up with regulations, or will we willfully regulate ourselves to death? I mean, I don't know. All signs are today that we are willfully going to regulate ourselves to death. You know, Donald Trump is telling us that he's deregulated 22 regulations for every new regulation. I mean, those numbers are bogus. There's no reason to believe any of them. But until you actually pass legislation that starts unwinding whole regulatory bills that actually ideally do away with whole regulatory agencies, even anything Donald Trump does, if he's doing anything good, he's doing some, but not a lot, would then be reversed by the next administration. So you really have to pass legislation, and they have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. You think that there'd be bill after bill after bill trying to force the Democrats not to vote on them, that deregulate, that do away with whole swaths of regulation. But none of that is happening. Now,
Trump is doing one thing, though, that has the potential to have staying power. And I talked about it in my show. I actually put the link to this week's show in the program notes. It's Trump and the Judiciary. It's my little news sandwich.
Yeah.
And he is using as a litmus test for his judicial appointments the sort of anti-regulation stance of the judges.
Yes.
And in particular, there's something called the Chevron Doctrine.
Yes.
The Chevron Doctrine says that...
Which Scalia voted for.
Yeah, but Gorsuch is against.
Gorsuch is against.
That's
great.
So, you know, Gorsuch, I think, you know, is a good replacement for Scalia in some ways. And then, you know, hopefully he's got some conceptual ability. That's what I'm hoping is going to come through in Carpenter. We'll see. But, you know, he's a better than Scalia on the Chevron Doctrine. Chevron Doctrine says that judges should give deference to federal agencies when federal agencies interpret statutes. So, for example, I was connecting
they
it with this Cloud Act, right? This Cloud Act gives tremendous discretion to administrative agencies, you know, people in the Trump administration, to make these deals with Turkey and whoever else is in the EU about our data, our personal data. And, you know, imagine if a judge is just going to say, okay, well, however they interpret it, and yeah, they can get it without a warrant or even without any suspicion at all. They can just grab the data because Turkey has no law. This is horrible.
Yep.
Imagine if you give deference to that. So Trump wants, and he has been, steadily making judicial appointments that are anti-administrative state.
Yep.
So that's one really good sign with...
I think that's right. And I think any Republicans would have done it because, I mean, basically he's given the ability to the Federalist Society to appoint these judges. They're the ones who recommend the judges to him.
Okay.
So that's good. And then some of the regulatory agencies like the EPA are rolling back. Now, what you're saying is long lasting because judges, some of them appointments to life, some of them are very long-term appointments. But even at the regulatory agencies, some things good are happening. It's just a question of how lasting they are. Thank you, Brian. I really appreciate that contribution. It's how lasting they are and how deep they really are and how much is really going on. There's a lot of talk, but I don't see, when I talk to businessmen, there's not a lot of action. There's not that much action with regards to this. So, you know, but the talk is good too. The talk is making businessmen more optimistic. They're investing more. Hopefully that'll all pay off in the end. Here's the question for Brian. Maybe you have something to say about this. What is your estimation of Richard Epstein, the law professor from NYU, and Hoover?
You know, the best person to answer that would be Adam Mossoff because he's had so much interaction with.
Yeah, I mean, I would say he's mixed. he's certainly one of the smartest people I've ever met. I've met Richard, and I've seen him speak, and he's wow. I mean, he gives a talk for like 45 minutes. It's super speed. It's all structured. It's all grammatical. It's all there, and it's got brilliant content. I don't agree with a lot of it. So he's definitely utilitarian. And so he doesn't believe really in rights, in individual rights, you know, in the proper sense. So while he's a genius,
I remember some of that on privacy that he's utilitarian.
Yeah,
about
he's
privacy.
Definitely utilitarian. So he's flawed, but he's about the best. There's about, yes, he's in the consequentialist. Brian writes, he's in the consequentialist. Yes. And the talk he gave was an unbelievably pessimistic talk that I heard. He was very anti-Trump. Mm-hmm. And really, really pessimistic about the future of America. This is probably a year and a half ago. Wow. But he is brilliant. And I think he would make an interesting Supreme Court judge, because I think he thinks out of the box. He's an innovative thinker. He comes up with ideas that I don't think other people do. But he's not a conservative, so he's not going to buy into the conservatives wanting to regulate certain aspects of our lives. He's much more of a libertarian, but he's definitely a utilitarian, so he's definitely a consequentialist, and that's always a problem.
Yeah, and that I think was the problem that I had with him when I looked at
his
privacy
stuff.
So many years ago. I've got to dive back in.
All right, dive back in. Where were we?
Okay, so here we are, and it's not – immigration per se, but one thing you could think of is that given the fact that immigrants are somewhat of a scapegoat, you could sort of use
somewhat?
This as...
What's this somewhat? Immigrants are a scapegoat.
Yeah, immigrants are a scapegoat. So listen to what they're going to do to people who want to come here and visit or immigrate to the United States. It's sort of a trial balloon because they're going to just do it to all of us eventually.
Sure.
14 million visitors to U.S. faced social media screening.
Okay.
You talked about, you know, forcing all of us to use
Facebook.
So it's
part of applying for a visa or is just
for a visa. It says nearly all applicants for a visa to enter the United States, an estimated 14.7 million people a year, will be asked to submit social media usernames for the past 5 years.
Oh, my God.
Under proposed rules that the State Department issued on Friday.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is coming. So... you know, so next time, you know, I have this global entry where I don't have to go through passport control. It's really quick in and out of the United States. And I get TSA pre as part of that. And they did a whole interview with me. My guess is that next time I go up for that, for the interview, they're going to ask me for the same kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, but you don't even share much with social media anyway. So what is it?
I don't share much personal on social media at all, but I share a lot of my philosophical ideas on social media.
Yes.
And I'm a threat to this. You know, many people on the right, many objectivists, so-called objectivists, consider me a threat to the safety of the United States of America because of my position on immigration, trade, and some other things. So who knows? I mean, that is disgusting. That is, I mean, I can understand if you're an immigrant, right? So as part of, I mean,
applying for citizenship
or applying for permanent residency, if there is reason to believe you might be a threat, one way to screen you qua threat is to screen your social media. Let's say you're from Saudi Arabia, you're from a country that we're suspicious of, they might want additional information. But to make that the standard, even for tourists, even for somebody from, I don't know, China, who is clearly is not a terrorist, is just nuts. It's just absurd.
Yeah. So now I guess at first it was going to just be for immigrant visas, and now it's for not only immigrant visas but also non-immigrant visas to cover.
But even for immigrant visas, I mean, the only ones that should is people who you might have a question mark about their security clearance. Could they be a threat? But short of that, I mean, this is the government wanting to know everything.
Because you and I agree, yes, there should be border checks.
Yes.
But then they should only go to a certain extent depending on the perceived risk. And so you would say in the first line of questioning, you would not include social media users.
Not at all. So okay. I would say there's some FBI database, name, Social Security, stick it into the thing. it immediately gives you, yeah, this guy's fine, and you let him pass, right? And but if the guy looks suspicious, or if the guy's coming from a Muslim country, let's say, and we haven't solved the problem of Islam yet, and mm-hmm. and all of that, then you say, okay, we'll do that screening, plus here's some additional screening. So I'm all for what the Trump administration has called, what do they call it?
Extreme vetting.
Extreme vetting. I'm all for extreme vetting of suspicious people. But you have to be suspicious.
Everybody, yeah.
You have to be suspicious. If you're not suspicious, then I don't believe, I believe in minimal vetting. I believe you still have to assume you're innocent until proven guilty. So if you don't pop up in a database somewhere, which should be instantaneously checked, then you're good to go. Now, I know there's some objectivists who don't believe in any screening. I disagree with them because I definitely think that the government has a role in defining the border and in regulating who comes in into the United States. I think it's part of the policing function of the government to yeah. have a general sense of who is in the United States at any given point in time.
No, and the way I think about it, too, is everybody that's already here.
And I don't believe it's a violation of rights to ask somebody basic ID at a border crossing between two countries. I don't think is a violation of anybody's rights.
Yeah. I mean, if the premise is that we're going to have a government that's got this, you know, kind of job of protecting the rights of all the people within this geographic area, all the people that are already here, the government is aware of them or should be aware of them if they have any criminal past or anything else. But somebody who's coming in new,
yep.
have no reason to know anything about them. And so, yeah, they have to get something basic.
Just the basic information that suggests that they're not crooks and that there's not a big problem with them. Just something basic. Yep.
Yeah. So to me, you know, this is overkill, you know, in terms of what our government needs to
do. It's a huge violation of these people's rights. I know a lot of people listening don't care about the rights of people who don't live in America, but everybody has individual rights, even people who live outside the U.S. And it's a massive violation of their rights. And it makes the U.S. it gives the U.S. government doodles of data on people all over the world, including on Americans or people who might become Americans. And it's as you said, it's a trial balloon for ultimately everything that every interaction with the government, they're going to want access to everything.
You know what they're doing in China, right? So in China, they're trying to give you some sort of social rating or something now.
Yeah.
And
how good of a
on
citizen
everybody
are you?
In the country, everybody in the country, they're harvesting social media data and everything else.
Oh, but that's China, right? And that's what we don't want to be.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And this moves us toward it. And people are going to say, oh, well, I don't care if they do that because these are only immigrants. And then suddenly they're going to come for the rest of us as well. The other immigration-related story, but again, it's not directly immigration, although we've pretty much rehashed our policies on it. U.S. says it can pay for 100 miles of the wall on the 2,000-mile border, I guess, with what it has. But one of the things that really galled me
is
this
the wall
going
to have holes in it to allow the cows to go back and forth or not? I mean, that's the question.
There are still going to be
because
some holes, at least for a while.
Because the wall that exists right now has holes in it to allow cows to go back and forth because it's blocking private property. There's a lot of land on the border that is owned by either Mexicans or Americans, half in the U.S. and half in Mexico, right? Private property. And they have cattle. And the cattle cross the border because we don't do background checks on cattle yet. But then when they built the wall under the Bush administration, in certain parts of these, they actually left holes in the wall so the cattle could go back and forth.
You know, cattle are herd animals. They're certainly going to vote Democrat, so
we shouldn't allow them into the U.S. Well, luckily they can't vote yet. But the Democrats are working on it.
They're working on getting them to vote. The thing that galled me, though, was that Trump put that tweet out there basically saying, oh, well, now that the military's got such great funding in the budget, we can see, of course, that the wall is a necessity from a national security standpoint, and so we should just move some of the funding over. Now, apparently, he still needs congressional approval to do this, but he certainly doesn't need congressional approval to tweet about trying to do it out there. What does he have? He's got, I guess, they asked for $1.6 billion to build a border wall, but Congress rejected that. In the spending bill, instead, they gave $1.6 billion for border security.
He asked for $25 billion, and then it shrunk to $1.6 billion. But even the $1.6 billion is not purely for wall; it's for border security. But no, I mean, there is no national security threat at the southern border of the United States. So the military budget should not be spent on securing that border, because they're securing it from whom? From what threat? Now, if Islamists in mass were crossing that border, we could have a discussion about that. But Islamists, as far as we know, are not. And if they are, they're not doing it in mass. And a war wouldn't stop them anyway. And if it wasn't Mexico, they'd come through Canada. And the solution, again, to the Islamist threat is not walls. It's, you know, if there was a civil war in Mexico and millions of Mexicans were eager to cross the border in mass, there would be some...
If there was a march to return.
Yeah, a march to return, like in the Gaza Strip right now.
Right.
Then there would be some reason to reinforce the border and to make it a national security issue. But they aren't. Immigration between Mexico and the United States is probably negative right now. It's probably true that more Mexicans are leaving the United States than are coming into the United States. Yeah, there's people from Guatemala and Honduras and Central America coming in, a wall is unlikely to stop them because they are truly, truly desperate. But that's not a national security threat. You might not like them. You might not like them getting welfare when they get here. You might not like the way they vote when they get here. You might think that some of them are criminals, and some of them certainly are criminals. That is, none of those things are a national security threat. Not one of those things are military issue. And once you start using military funds, which you already do to some extent, to secure things internally, now it gets really dangerous in terms of the individual rights of Americans and what that actually means. The job of the military is external. It's to protect us from external threats. That's it.
Yeah.
And you do not use it for policing. You do now. If you use the police budget, you could make an argument for using the police budget, but you cannot make the argument for using the military budget.
Here's the question. Even think that there's going to be a border wall anyway, that he's ever going to succeed with it?
No. But what's the name said that he was going to lose all his voters if there's no wall? There'll be something symbolic. There'll be symbolic stuff. I mean, because Congress is not insane, and they're not going to approve those numbers. Republicans don't think it's a winning issue ultimately, and it's insane cost with literally zero benefit. Zero benefit.
Yeah. And yet she's warning him, saying, you know, a former Trumper.
Let me just say, Mexicans are not crossing the border en masse. They're not. That is just empirically, factually wrong. I mean, the fact is that Mexican immigration into this country is negative, has been for 10 years. There are no more Mexicans in America today than there were 10 years ago. There are actually fewer Mexicans in America today than there were 11 years ago in 2007 when it peaked. So just look at the numbers. Don't read what's her name. What's the woman's name who attacked Trump?
Coulter?
Coulter, Ann Coulter. Don't read Ann Coulter. She makes stuff up. She. I don't know if you saw the video I did yesterday where I talked about Robert Reich, about how he just chooses his data and he chooses what to show and what. Coulter does that on every issue. She's a complete hack. She is not a purveyor of truth like we are. You want to listen to truth? You get truth from Yaron and Amy. That's where you get truth from.
Definitely.
Not from conservative hacks like Ann Coulter.
Well, apparently she's given the warning out to Trump that it helped get him elected. And
she did.
That
it's true. She helped scare the American people into electing Donald Trump. Donald Trump, you know, there was carnage in the streets of America. Illegal immigrants were all going to take our jobs and kill us all. And the Chinese were basically stealing all our wealth. And that's why Donald Trump got elected. And she and Michelle Malkin, I used to like Michelle Malkin, but I despise her now. All of them played into this scaremongering game that ultimately, I would take on Coulter on a debate on this any day, and she would lose big time because she has no data. She lies and she makes stuff up. Now, she's good at telling stories. She's good at anecdotes. She's very good at anecdotes, but she doesn't understand the concept of individual rights. She doesn't know what America is or what it represents, and she doesn't have data on her side. She doesn't. So the idea that she would defeat me in a debate only if she would. She would. She's very effective in telling you stories that cause you to tear up. And if what you value is the tearing up, then yeah, she would take me in a debate. But if you value facts, if you value principles, if you value individual rights and what America actually represents, Ann Coulter will go down in flames. And Ann Coulter, by the way, no, she's not an excellent sort for anything. I've read her books, I've seen her numbers, and the numbers are made up numbers. But more than that, Ann Coulter is very good at attacking other people's positions. She is incompetent in defending her own positions. I've seen her in debates. She falls apart because she cannot defend her own position without lying and making stuff up. All right.
Trump, on the other hand, should be scared of her, right?
What's that? Trump should be scared of her, yes, because she is one of his army, and if she turns against him, people are asking, what's my opinion on Mark Levin?
Mark Levin?
Yeah, people are. Yeah, but she distorts the Goldman Sachs data. Anyway, I shouldn't be debating this guy on because he doesn't know what he's talking about. What do I think of Mark Levin? I mean, Mark Levin's smart. He's passionate. There's a lot of facts, but he's too conventional. He's religious, and he's too conventional in his politics, and he's too Republican. I would have had a lot more respect to Mark Levin if he had stuck by his initial gut, which was to be anti-Trump. But he became just another mouthpiece for the Trump administration.
I think he's criticizing Trump quite a bit now, though, what I've heard.
I don't know because I don't listen to him anymore.
I just thought his idea of an Article 5 convention was way too optimistic in terms of that we'd get anything that was that much better coming out of such a convention. True, it might be a great vehicle for making fundamental changes in our government, but I don't know that the changes could be made in substantially the right direction given the state of the culture today, particularly when we see – you know, when I attack Trump on Twitter, all the way the people come after me and stuff, those are going to be the people at the Article 5 convention, right? Let me ask you one question to try to get a little more optimistic before we end up here. It's getting depressing. So what do we do to try to help defend the tech companies against the calls for regulations? So, because as I said, to me, I see them as the ones who are standing between us and 1984, what can be done?
I mean, you got to advocate for the truth. You got to, and I think you got to admire and respect and stand up for the productive. And if we stop defending businessmen who are productive, put aside their politics, put aside all that, but for their productivity, then America's lost and we are lost as a movement. We must, I think objectivism should be at the forefront of defending tech companies from government. We should be at the forefront of defending their property rights. We should be the anti-Prager in defending them, and on the basis of the virtue of productiveness, on the basis of the virtue of reason, of the basis of the virtue of rationality. And, you know, so I think that's what we need to do. And then, of course, I still think that the only barrier to the world descending into Jordan Peterson's chaos, into authoritarianism, is objectivism. I just don't see anybody else out there that has anything to offer the world other than objectivism. I mean, they really don't. The best of them, like a Jordan Peterson, is a mishmash of some good things and some stupid things and some awful things. And
he doesn't give a real, you know, when you actually analyze his argument, he doesn't give you a real argument as to why you should choose his path.
Yes, there's nobody. There's no philosophy out there. There's no set of ideas. There's no set of political principles that I know of or principles to live your life by that can actually have a positive impact in the world other than objectivism. And we live or die by it. But so to me, we've got to defend productive businessmen, obviously not the businessmen who are cronies who are not productive. But, you know, listen to the session I did on Jeff Immelt from GE. I mean, the guy's obviously not worth defending, but productive businessmen. We got to defend reason and rationality, which means you have to defend facts, which goes back to this issue with Colter and Trump. They don't use facts. They don't use evidence. They manipulate using emotions. And that's not what we do. We look at actual facts, actual evidence, and what that actual fact and actual evidence is. And we look for principles. And you've got to fight on principle, and you've got to use facts and reason. And yeah, people say, oh, you're losing because you're not using emotion enough. You're not playing on people's emotion. You have to compromise a little bit on your ideas to manipulate people emotionally. No, because once we do that, we lose. That's it. If we are the defenders of reason and rationality, that's what it's all about. This is a battle, as Ayn Rand said, between reason and mysticism.
Right. I mean, I guess we could get more emotional about the topic, but yeah. I would leave it to the conceptual ability of people who are listening to us to read Orwell's 1984 and to realize that that's where we're going if we put these tech companies that have all this information about us, if we put them at the mercy of the government anymore than they already are.
Absolutely.
And yet everybody's calling for regulation. Everyone is themselves calling for 1984 to become a reality. That's the way I see it. I don't think I'm exaggerating. You know, how many years would it be until we get there? You know, it's slow steps. It's the GIF, the frog in the boiling water. I hate that one. I don't know if you've seen it, because it's an actual frog and you see him boiling in the GIF. It's hideous so often. I just feel like that's what we all are, that we're the frog and you put it in the water that you're gradually heating the boiling.
There's no question. I mean, we've been like this for 100 years and it appears to be continuing, and it doesn't appear that there's any stop. And again, I think the only stop to it, the only stopping it, is a philosophical, waking up, or not even a waking up, because it's not, a new philosophy, a philosophical revolution. And what we're really calling for is a philosophical revolution. And I know the alt-right, which is on YouTube and everywhere else, they think that, you have to play to the tribalism and the collectivism that is out there in order to achieve anything. But what do you achieve by that? You achieve the undermining of what you're fighting for, which is, at the end of the day, reason and individualism. Everything else is crap. Everything else doesn't matter. It's individualism and reason. That's what we're fighting for. Politics is just, what results if you get that right or if you get that wrong. But it's reason and individualism. The rest is nonsense. Yeah, Trump won. Who exactly won because Trump won? I don't see any winners out there. I see a lot of losers, and they're going to be more and more losers. And at the end of the day, this country is the loser. So it's Ayn Rand and Aristotle. Somebody said that's what we should be fighting for.
Yeah,
all right.
Say Trump won for now. So the optimistic thing is what? That you had a good event with Dave Rubin?
Yeah, that we keep fighting, that I'm leaving on a plane on Sunday. Hey, by the way, if you're in Argentina, I know some people listen to the show in Argentina. Two great events, one on Wednesday. Intelligence Squared debate. We're expecting over 400 people on inequality. It should be a lot of fun. It's me and a free market economist versus two lefties talking about debating inequality, and that's in Buenos Aires. And then I'm flying to Cordoba. I don't know how you pronounce it, something like that, where there's going to be a talk that I'm going to give, also open to the public. All the information on all of that I'm going to post on Facebook, so you can see it on Facebook. And then if you're in Brazil on Friday in Porto Alegre, I am I try to pronounce it right. I'm giving a two-hour seminar on objectivism. Well, what is objectivism? So I'm hoping you come to that. Then on Saturday, I'm giving a talk on the proper role of government at a conference. And then I'm talking at high schools in Porto Alegre. And then I think at least one, maybe two universities. And then I'm giving this talk to 6,000 people about equal is unfair. So that's South America. And then, of course, if you live in, let's see if I remember, Serbia, Hungary, Ukraine, or Georgia, I'm coming your way. So keep track of my Facebook page for more information about those talks. All those talks are open to the public, and it should be exciting for you to watch. In the meantime, go to Patreon. Here, let me share a screen. I think this will work. I think this will work. Where is the screen? There it is. There's my Patreon page. You can make a contribution. That would be cool. And I'd really value it. And, we're at 4,942. The first target is 6,000. I don't know. Maybe in a month we should get there. That would be nice. 359 patrons. I don't know. That seems low to me. But I'll leave that up to you to decide whether you want to become a patron or not. Amy has the same thing. She has a Patreon site. So go to her Patreon site. Contribute. Make these shows possible. Make all my traveling possible. Make all the stuff that we do to try to fight against the philosophical trends that the world has today, so we can reverse them and bring about freedom, reason, and egoism to the world.
I'm not traveling, but I might be on Tucker soon again on Fox.
Cool.
I've been going back
Very
and forth
cool.
with the producer, so
Very
hopefully
cool.
soon for that.
Good, good. Yeah. And we're going to try to do the Ron and Amy show while I'm traveling. More on that as I travel. I mean, right now I have all these monitor space to run everything. We'll see how I can pull it all off on my little laptop, but we should be able to do it.
So hopefully
we won't take a 3-week break from the Ron and Amy show. We'll be doing these on Saturdays. I think we can probably do it either on Saturdays or Sundays going into the future. So, Amy, have a good rest of your weekend.
Safe travels to you, and thank you.
Thank you. And all of you out there, have a great weekend. Go do something fun. Go buy something beautiful. Go see something beautiful. Go to a museum. Go have a good time.
Do you like the Ravel concerto I posted in the notes?
I haven't listened to it. Ravel is not one of my favorite composers.
Right.
He's a little too impressionistic. But I was listening last night to Schumann's piano concerto, which I know I've known for many, many decades. Wow. Schumann's piano concerto just makes you
I'll go check it out.
So
then.
Beautiful. Schumann's piano concerto is gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. So there's your musical recommendation. Go listen to something really, truly beautiful. All right. See you all. Bye.
Thank you.